Krishna. Welcome to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir's Sunday Feast Program. It was almost 1 year ago today that I visited the temple here by invitation of Radhanath Maharaj. So it's very nice to be back again and see so many wonderful Vaishnavas here at the temple. This Sunday Feast program, this has been going on since the very beginning of the ISKCON Society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Of course, we know it was incorporated in New York City at temple. It was 26 Second Avenue in New York City. That was the very first temple Srila Prabhupada established in the West. And I was at that temple just a few months ago. They had their 40th anniversary of the incorporation of ISKCON there. So from that time, one disciple, Kirtanananda Maharaj, he told Prabhupada that this Sunday is a very special day, he said, in the West. Everybody, they go to the church, they have outings, families get together, they have big dinners like that. And he said, maybe we can do something like that. So Prabhupada thought the idea was very nice. So from that very beginning, they've been having this very special program where all the devotees get together and newcomers come as well and get to hear a little philosophy and some kirtan, Hare Krishna mantra, and then take prasadam. And very nice prasadam has always been the standard in the temples from the very beginning. So this process has been going on since that time, and it will continue to go on. Srila Prabhupada said that not everyone can digest philosophy. Sometimes philosophy is a little difficult, he says. So not everyone can digest philosophy, but everyone can digest prasadam. So I know it says this can go on till 3 o'clock, and I thought it was such a long time to speak. So anyway, when Radhanath Maharaj speaks, it's always very nice, and it's also very tasty prasadam. So I'll do my best today to speak nicely. We wanted to speak in particular today about Srila Prabhupada, since now as I travel around, that's been the tendency. It's what I do since I spent a good amount of time with Srila Prabhupada as his personal servant. And now recently, for some years now, I've been traveling around and I've had the privilege of going to temples. Just this summer, I went to so many temples. I was in Spain and Italy, Croatia and Slovenia, and then I went to New York City for the festival there. And also went to Brazil. It was my first trip ever to Brazil, where they have a half a dozen temples in Brazil. And also, I was telling the devotees, I went to Moscow in Russia for the first time. So to do this is really, it's a wonderful opportunity for me, and it's wonderful to be able to speak about Srila Prabhupada. But it's also very amazing to see what Srila Prabhupada has done. Before I just start talking about some stories about Srila Prabhupada, it's important that we understand, we were speaking about this morning, why these stories are so wonderful, why the devotees are so attracted to hear about Srila Prabhupada and all his activities, some of them very simple, some very profound. Always there's lessons within these stories about Srila Prabhupada. But the thing that's the most wonderful is you go everywhere now and people are chanting Hare Krishna mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha mantra. As I said, I spent 10 days in Brazil. Prabhupada never personally went to Brazil. He almost went to Brazil. He was in Caracas, Venezuela, in South America in 1975. And I was with him at that time. But then just after that, His devotees went there, even before that, Ridayananda Maharaj and some other devotees went by Srila Prabhupada's orders. and open up temples in Brazil. And now when I was in Brazil, they have wonderful communities there. Brazil is a very rich country, rich in natural resources, very beautiful country, lots of trees, lots of water, and many devotees. And there they had at least five or six different farm communities. And in one of these communities, they had they maintain the entire farm. They have banana trees, and they're very nice bananas. They have three different kinds of bananas that they grow. And they dry all these bananas. They dry them out, as I'm sure you're familiar with dried banana. And they sell them. It's an organic farm. They use no pesticides, no chemical fertilizers, nothing at all. It's completely organic. So they take all these bananas and they dry them, and then they're sold all through stores within Brazil. And by this process, they're maintaining their farm there, and there's over 100 devotees living there. And there was another farm that they have, several acres, and it's an ecological showpiece there in Brazil, where whatever is built on this farm, all the structures, the temple, all the housing, it's all done with whatever is locally available. And these are things that Prabhupada really liked to see happening. These are things he encouraged us to do in society as years went by in Varnashram, saying that we need to learn how to live from the land and to utilize the cows and to utilize the bull and the oxen for plowing the fields. So to go to these places now and see Prabhupada's desires being fulfilled. And then each morning the devotees going to the temple and worshiping the deities, chanting, just like here. I went out for a little walk and everywhere I see people coming to the temple. Everybody has their japa bags. They're all chanting japa on the way to the mandir here. It's such a wonderful thing. So this is all by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, as we keep stressing day after day that, of course, in India, these things were going on a little bit. Outside of India, it was not going on at all. But now, everywhere we go, anywhere, be it South America, as Bhavananda was saying in class, even in Siberia, in Russia, where I was in Russia for 1 week for Janmashtami festival, Vyas Puja festival. And they have thousands of devotees now in Russia. And they have over 160 centers in Russia. That's temples, preaching centers, Namhatta centers. But throughout this vast country, there's over 160 centers. And some of these centers are very far up in the northern region of Russia. Niranjan Maharaj was telling me, you go there, he says, and you'd never see the sun. It's so far up that during the winter time it's just darkness. But still there are people there chanting Hare Krishna. So these are the things that Prabhupada has done by his coming to the West, by initiating this chanting, and by stressing to his followers to do the same thing. Just like this is going on here. So many thousands of people coming here. Because Prabhupada's process was, we become a devotee, but then tell others about Krishna. This was Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. To tell everyone you meet. I always tell that story. Back in 1973, it was right here in Bombay. At that time, Prabhupada was staying at the flats of Kartikeya Mahadevya. It's just probably 5-10 minutes away from here, I think. And his secretary was Shyama Sundar, and I was the servant. Shyama Sundar had a daughter. She was a 3-year-old girl, American girl, light hair. So she was very much appreciated at that time in India. When we would come, the Americans, Prabhupada always said we were white elephants coming to India, so people would always look at us. And then they would see us with shaved heads, and dhoti and kurta and bead bags. So we became 100 times more interesting to the local people. Now here was not only was it an American girl, but she was just 3 years old. She just stood this high, blonde hair and tilak on, with her little hand, and sometimes in a bead bag, sometimes in a cookie cookie box. But she was also chanting Hare Krishna, and she would go to people, and she would say, she would go up to any nook, and she would say to a man, "Do you know who Krishna is?" And of course they would go, "No." And she would say, "He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead." And they would go, "Oh, very nice, you know." So Prabhupada heard this, and he would say, "Her preaching is perfect. That's all you have to do. You don't have to," as I was saying to them, "you don't have to read so many books. You don't need to understand so much philosophy. You just go to someone and tell them, 'Do you know Krishna? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead.'" So this was Prabhupada's preaching, to not just tell us, but to convince us to tell everyone we meet that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we're Krishna's servants. Our position is to be servitor to Krishna, and in this way we become happy. So now everywhere you go, it was so nice to go to Russia. Prabhupada had been there 35 years ago. It was 35 years ago when Prabhupada went to Russia. I was talking about it. And he spent 3 days in Russia. Just 3 days in Moscow in one city. And he talked to one person. Talked to two people. He talked to one professor, Kotovsky. But then he talked to one boy and he initiated him. Back in 1971, the same time I came to the society, he was initiating this boy in Russia. And he took morning walks in Red Square. And then he left. And now, all these years later, Russia has thousands of devotees. So this was the potency that Srila Prabhupada has. It's not an ordinary thing. And this is why every day, every evening, we're glorifying Srila Prabhupada. His very special position. And he continues to empower the devotees within this ISKCON society. As I always said, it's not that Prabhupada has left us stranded. He's here. Prabhupada said ISKCON is his body. So he's here taking care of everything. So he's brought all of you here. You know, they always tell this story here, right? Prabhupada spoke just right outside the building right there. And Maharaj told me as soon as I came, Prabhupada spoke right there. That was 1970. And he walked out front and said, "This would be a nice place for a temple." And boom, and here is a temple. So Prabhupada's desire was so strong. And Krishna was always fulfilling the desire of his devotee. So on that we take great happiness and we take shelter in being followers of Srila Prabhupada. And if we follow Prabhupada's program strictly, then that's discipline. Prabhupada would say disciple means discipline. Not that you just take initiation, some ceremony, and then you do anything you want. But to be a disciple means you follow a discipline. And then if you follow, then you're connected to the parampara. And that parampara comes down through Srila Prabhupada. So we've been describing over the last few days how wonderful it is to be connected to Srila Prabhupada's society, to have Srila Prabhupada's books, that he works so hard every day, all his books we see there, translated into so many languages, because he wanted us to read these books. And so he made it so available. Prabhupada's compassion cannot be compared. There's so much compassion Prabhupada had for everyone. And when he went there to New York City, he was 70 years old. Most people we know, we look for that time, at 70 years old. You want to be finished everything. And just relax, watch your family. Hopefully they'll take care of you. They send you off to some home. This is in the Western style, you know. They send you off to a nursing home somewhere to live out your final days. And Prabhupada, he was in Vrindavan, as he said, living very comfortably. But he had his order from his spiritual master. So the next 10 years, he just traveled around so many places. And we can't even understand the degree of Prabhupada's potency, what he did by going in these places, just everything, the trees, the flowers, the animals, the different people seeing him, hearing him, how in later years we manifest into devotees. This is what we see in Russia. Now, Prabhupada was just there a few days, but now there's thousands of devotees in Russia, just by the potency of one pure devotee. So this is the person who we're talking about today. So when we hear these stories, they're very enjoyable to all of Prabhupada's followers, because he's just like Krishna in Krishna book, his stories. Prabhupada said in Krishna book, I used to read him Krishna book before I was even his servant. And I would look for stories about demons, you know, to read the Prabhupada. Because whenever I read stories about demons, Prabhupada laughed. You know, whenever Krishna would kill a demon, Prabhupada would laugh and laugh. It was so fun. So then I started looking. And he saw me looking for a story, and he just said, read anywhere. He said, Krishna's like a sweet ball. He said, everywhere you bite, he's sweet. So that's Krishna. So also when we hear these pastimes, these anecdotes, these stories about Srila Prabhupada, they're all very sweet to the devotees. Because Prabhupada is Krishna's pure devotee. So the pure devotee of Krishna is also very sweet. So these stories are also very sweet. So, with that note, this afternoon, I was going to tell some stories. One devotee this morning, he asked me about Paramahamsa. Paramahamsa Swami. He was my godbrother, Prabhupada's disciple. And him and I, we served Prabhupada together in 1974 and 1975. And he was a very nice devotee, Paramahamsa, very tall, little broad, very tall and a very nice round face. He was a very angelic boy, and he was younger than I was. So in 1975, in 74, I was 23 years old as Prabhupada's servant. So he was 21 years old, and he was Prabhupada's secretary. He was responsible for arranging all the flights for Srila Prabhupada, the visas, the passports, and going over the mail. Each day the mail would come in, so he would go over the mail, and there's so many other personal assistant, secretary things. So I first met Paramahamsa, it was in 1972, and that was in Vrindavan. When I became Prabhupada's servant, in New Vrindavan, right, this is what he was mentioning, this is what Radhanath Maharaj mentions in the book, I was in New Vrindavan working in the kitchen, and by Krishna's grace, I became Prabhupada's servant, just as Prabhupada was leaving New Vrindavan. So I had 12 hours notice, and Kirtananda came into the kitchen and said, do you want to be Prabhupada's servant? So what brahmachari wouldn't want to do such a wonderful thing? So I just said, yes. So the next morning, he said, next morning you go with Prabhupada. So I left with Prabhupada that very day. It was September 11th of 1972. So 1 month later, I was in Vrindavan with Srila Prabhupada after traveling from New York to Los Angeles, going further west, and then Delhi. And then for the entire month of Kartik, I was in Vrindavan at Radha Damodar Temple with Srila Prabhupada, in Srila Prabhupada's rooms. We still have these rooms at Radha Damodar Temple. And I was able to stay there with Srila Prabhupada. And, of course, he was very, very excited about going back to Vrindavan. This is the place he had left. He had been there a few times since, but he left there in 1965. And when he left, no one imagined that Srila Prabhupada would be successful. You know, other people had left India to try to establish some yoga or some philosophy, and Vaishnavas had traveled a little bit to England and to America, but no one had ever succeeded in spreading the message of Lord Chaitanya in the West. And no one thought that Prabhupada could do it either. especially he was 70 years old and he had no money. He had no money when he went there. He had his books. So they had thought, as again Bhavananda was saying, because Lord Chaitanya said this chanting of Hare Krishna would be spread to every town and village. But within Bharat Varsha here in India, no one really thought it was true. They thought it was poetry, nice poetic statement. It sounded very good, looked very nice. But no one believed that it actually could be spread outside of India. So now in 5 years, Prabhupada had coming to this Radha Damodar temple, there were 60, 70 Western devotees, mostly American devotees, some American and European disciples. So he brought them to Vrindavan for a Kartik festival. This was the first big Kartik festival. You know, now every year we have big Krishna Balaram, thousands of devotees are coming every year. But this was the first big such festival. And Prabhupada wanted them to see, he wanted to see the local inhabitants, the Brijbasis, what Lord Chaitanya had done. We know what Srila Prabhupada had done. But he wanted them to see how this movement had spread to the Westerners and they had become Vaishnavas. And Prabhupada, he was very proud of his Western disciples. He didn't consider them to be Western disciples, Western Vaishnavas. They were Vaishnavas. He considered first-class Vaishnavas. And he was very, very happy to show them to everyone in Vrindavan. So this was the setting that was there in this time, as Prabhupada would speak to his disciples morning and evening. In the evening he would do Nectar of Devotion class. And he said, and my classes are in English for my Western disciples. He wanted everyone to see that he was giving instruction to the Westerners who had now become Vaishnava. So, as I was explaining, it was a very difficult time, really, 1972 in India, particularly in Vrindavan. It's not like it is today. It was very austere in Vrindavan. And for Westerners, it was very difficult to live there. So many of these people had traveled there for the first time. And they spent a lot of time just trying to be healthy. You know, when Westerners went to India back then, we would always become sick because we were not very careful. We would drink water that was contaminated. Sometimes they would become fascinated and they would eat outside at the stalls. You know, they would buy sweets or buy whatever outside. And in so many ways, they would get malaria. They would come down with dysentery, severe dysentery, jaundice. All these things were going on to the Westerners. So while in Vrindavan, during this festival, you never saw devotees during the daytime. There was no guest house. They stayed at Keshigat Palace, Fogala Ashram, different places. They would have to find where they could stay. Because there was no Krishna Balaram Mandir guest house, and so many guest houses are there now when you go to Vrindavan. So they would try to be healthy. They would try to keep clean, get their laundry done, and find something nice to eat. And so at Radha Damodar Temple during the day, there were no devotees there. It was just Prabhupada would be sitting in his room, and he would be chanting, or he would walk around and chant. And of course, I was there. I'm doing my service and giving massage like that. But one day there was a devotee and he was walking around in the courtyard, this big brahmachari. And he was just walking in front of the deities and he was chanting japa. And Prabhupada saw him from his room and he said, "Who is that boy?" Big American boy. And I said, "I don't know, Prabhupada." So Prabhupada said, "Call him in here." So he got very special mercy. He got called right into Prabhupada's room. So he went in, Prabhupada's little sitting room in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was sitting on his cushion on the floor. And he said, "Where have you come from?" And he said, "Oh, my godbrother and I, we were preaching in India, in South India, and distributing books." And Prabhupada said, oh. Because at that time, everyone, just like here, no one goes anywhere in a temple unless you get permission from the temple authorities. In ISKCON in 1971, 1972, you just lived in the temple. You had no money. A brahmachari never had anything. Just like here, you have little cabinets. We didn't even have cabinets, you know. We didn't own our own dhotis, you know. There was just a big mass of dhotis. Every day in the morning, the dhotis would all be cleaned and they would be stacked up and you just would grab. We were very communal living, so you would grab your dhoti. So the earlier you got up, the nicer your clothes were. You know? You could tell at Mangalartik who got up the earliest because you had matching clothing. You know? So, but here was this brahmachari. He just seemed to be independent. So Prabhupada's inquiring, what are you doing? And then he said, after this festival, what are you doing? And brahmachari said, oh, he said, we're thinking we're going to go to Vietnam to preach. And Prabhupada looked in his eyes and he said, acha? He said, Vietnam? He said, yes, Prabhupada. Vietnam, 1972, was like Iraq. There was a big war going on. It was a good-sized war. America was in there. And, you know, so many soldiers were dying every day and they're killing so many Vietnamese every day. And spreading napalm, this fire everywhere. So it was the most dangerous place you could possibly go at this time was Vietnam. So when Prabhupada asked him, he said, we're going to Vietnam to preach. Prabhupada was shocked. And he said, oh. He said, well, he said, perhaps you should take sannyas. So now at this time, this boy is a teenager. He's not even 20 years old. He's like 18 years old boy. He'd been a devotee for a year and a half. And Prabhupada said, maybe you should take sannyas. And Paramahamsa, he was like, and he hesitated. And Prabhupada said, oh, okay. He said, well, he said, you should go, he said, and chant japa in front of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kutir, which is right there at Radha Damodar Temple. And he said, you pray to Srila Rupa Goswami, and he'll tell you what you should do, like that. So Paramahamsa, yes, Prabhupada, I'll tell you. Left the room. So he went there that day, and he's sitting. Paramahamsa was telling me this a few years ago, and he's sitting and he's chanting right in front of Srila Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada says he started this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Srila Rupa Goswami. So he's there and he's chanting. He's trying to be very attentive and he's chanting and he starts thinking, sannyas. You know, yes. Every brahmachari wants to take sannyas. Huh? So he starts thinking, yes, sannyas. And he's thinking and he's praying and meditating. And he says, yes, that sounds like a nice, good idea, you know. So he's looking for Srila Rupa Goswami's mercy. So the next day he comes back and asks to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, so, what will you do? And Paramahamsa says, yes, Prabhupada, we should take sannyas. Prabhupada smiled. He said, okay. So he said, we'll have sannyas initiation. Anniversary just passed a few days ago. On the last day of Kartik, Rasa Yatra, on the very day of Rasa Leela in Vrindavan, he said, in the evening, in Srila Rupa Goswami's, by his Bhajan Kutir, he said, we'll have initiation ceremony, sannyas initiation. And he said he would be there, and he was initiating many other sannyasis at that day. So Srila Prabhupada was making a very big statement here in Vrindavan. Not only now do we have Vaishnavas, he's initiating sannyasis in Vrindavan at Radha Damodar Temple, right where he started this movement, at Radha Damodar Temple. So he said, you tell your godbrother, Shyamasundar, that was Prabhupada's secretary. He's been here many times, Shyamasundar. He said, you tell Shyamasundar to bring you to Lohi Bazaar. And there he'll buy you, you'll get your bamboo for danda and fresh cloth, your fresh cloth for sannyas. So he said, yes, Prabhupada. So he left the room, and then he has to go find Shyamasundar, you know, in Vrindavan. So he goes Shyamasundar, and he tells him, Shyamasundar, he said, Prabhupada said you should take me to Lohi Bazaar, because you have to buy me danda, you have to buy me bamboo and cloth, because I'm getting sannyas. And Shyamasundar looked at him, and he started laughing. He said, you're not getting sannyas. And he says, yes, Prabhupada said. And Shyamasundar, he was secretary for a long time, and he said, Prabhupada didn't say anything to me about you. He said, you're not on the list for sannyas. He said, he didn't tell me. So Paramahamsa was just a young boy, you know. He was like 18. Shyamasundar was already, he's like 30 years old, you know. So Paramahamsa was pleading. He said, ask Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, you know, make a sannyas. So Shyamasundar went and he asked Prabhupada, you know, are these boys getting sannyas, Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, they're also getting sannyas. And Shyamasundar said, yes, Prabhupada. So then, it was still some days away. So during that time, the word started to get out that this boy, this two young brahmacharis, they were getting sannyas with the others. The others meant, I think it was maybe Satsarup getting sannyas, then Guru Kripa, Yasoda Nandan Swami, they got sannyas at this time. So they became very, some of them became upset because they had been devotees for a long time, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, you know, they were senior devotees, and here were these boys, only been a devotee for 2 years, and they were getting sannyas. And one of them said, the devotees, they don't even know the philosophy. They don't even know any Sanskrit slokas. They can't even chant slokas. How can they get sannyas? How can they preach? So this went back to Prabhupada, but Prabhupada insisted that they get sannyas. So the night finally came. It was the night of Rasa Leela, the very last day of Kartik in 1972. And Prabhupada had a big fire yajna right there by Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi. And so many devotees were given sannyas initiation right there in the courtyard. And at the ceremony, Prabhupada said that Rupa Goswami was present, that he was personally present. He said, Rupa Goswami and Narada Muni. Prabhupada would say that sometimes, that Narada Muni was, he was always coming to different things. Prabhupada would say, Narada Muni is here, and we would all say, but at this ceremony, he said that Narada Muni and Rupa Goswila, Rupa Goswami were present at this special ceremony, this initiation ceremony. Because all the previous acharyas, they were all very eager to see this Krishna consciousness movement spread. And Prabhupada, he was doing that. So we never had any doubt. When he said that they were present, it meant that they were present. Maybe we didn't see them, but Prabhupada said they were present. And we were convinced Prabhupada could see them if they were present. So I didn't see Paramahamsa again for 2 years, and I don't know if he went to Vietnam. Some people ask, did he ever go to Vietnam? I'm not sure. I kind of think he didn't go to Vietnam. But I didn't see him for 2 years, and the next time I saw him was in Juhu, and he was becoming Prabhupada's secretary. So that's when I actually got to know Paramahamsa. So again, now this time, I'm 23 years old, and he's like 21 years old. So he was the very youngest sannyasi ever initiated by Srila Prabhupada. And he was very nice. I don't have a book here. There's pictures of him in the book. Like I said, he had like a big round face. And when he became Prabhupada's secretary, he first thing he would do, as we know, whenever you would go in to see the spiritual master, we would offer obeisances. So Paramahamsa, he was very tall. He was like 2 meters tall, you know, over 6 foot, 6 foot three or something. So when Prabhupada would ring the bell, I would go in and he would say, get Paramahamsa. So then I would get Paramahamsa. So he would go in and he would, his whole body, he would lay down across the floor in front of Prabhupada's desk and he would start chanting Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasanna. And then after he was done that, he would keep chanting. He would chant so many Sanskrit prayers in glorification of the spiritual master. So I said, so now he knew his Sanskrit slokas. He had learned different slokas by this time. He had been sannyasi for a few years. So he was so happy to be Prabhupada's secretary. So he would just lie down, his big body, and he'd start chanting all these different, you know, Om Aginantam, and then he'd go on and on. So he did this for a few days. Every time Prabhupada called for Paramahamsa, he would go in and he'd lay down and he'd just glorify Prabhupada. So then after 3 days he went in and he's down and he's in the mountain. And then he starts chanting more Sanskrit. And Prabhupada said, sit up! He sat up and Prabhupada said, how are we going to get any work done with you lying there on the floor? So Prabhupada didn't just want, you know, nice glorification. Do something practical. Prabhupada said that to Vishal. If any of you ever met Vishal, come through here. He was one devotee. Whenever he saw Prabhupada, he would chant so many slokas. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, do something practical. So this was our Paramahamsa Swami. So we had many nice times together. One just right there in Juhu, because of course Juhu is famous, Juhu Beach. Prabhupada liked Juhu so much, that area. And every morning he would walk on the beach. And at that time it was Paramahamsa and myself and Nitai Das. He was doing the Sanskrit editing. So we were all American boys and we were all young. And what happened was, after I gave Prabhupada massage, then he would bathe, and then he would have his lunch. So now, in India, I didn't have to cook for Prabhupada because there were many experienced, nice ladies that could cook, like Jamuna, Palika, Madhvi, Malati. They all knew how to cook nicely. So they would, usually someone would be there and they would cook. So we had some free time. We would have like 1 hour of free time. So now we're at Juhu. So, of course, right just a few minutes away from the temple, there's famous Juhu Beach. Now, it was always very hot, huh? At that time, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. And no one would be on the beach, but we were Americans, so we liked the idea of beaches, you know, going to the beach and going in the water and swimming around. And so we all started going to the beach. So every day, Prabhupada would have his lunch and the three of us would go off with our gumshoes and we'd lie down in the sweltering sun, you know, and bake, and then we would go in the water. And then we'd come back by the time Prabhupada was finished lunch. So after some days, Nitai said, I can't do this. He said, I have too much work to do. I said, okay. So then Paramahamsa and I, we were together going to the beach. And after a few days, Paramahamsa said, Shruta, he said, I can't do this anymore. He said, I have all this mail piling up. You know, he said, I have to type letters. And I said, okay. So I kept going to the beach by myself. I was brahmachari, and I was just going to Juhu Beach while Prabhupada was eating lunch. So after doing for a few more days, I came back. And Prabhupada was on the flat, third floor flat at that time. And Paramahamsa said, oh, he said, Prabhupada wants to see you. And he's really mad. Huh? And this was always the way we talked to each other. Whenever Prabhupada wanted to see someone, you know, and he was really mad, you know, we would say, we enjoyed it, you know. Because when you were around Prabhupada, chastisement could be there anytime. We were always doing crazy things, you know, foolish things. So when you saw someone else getting chastised, you'd become very happy, you know. So he said, Prabhupada wants to see you when he's really mad. And you'd say it with a smile on your face. You know? And I say, what did I do? He said, well, he asked where you were, and I told him, you're going to the beach by yourself. So he's very upset. And I said, oh, okay. So I said, now? He said, he wants to see you right away. So Prabhupada had finished his lunch, and he's sitting behind his desk, just on a cushion. Prabhupada just sat on a cushion on the floor, and he's behind his desk, and I came right up beside him. You know, I offered obeisances, and I was right there. And I said, Prabhupada, you wanted to see me? And he looked at me, he said, no. I said, you didn't want to see me? He said, no. I said, Paramahamsa said that you wanted to see me. He said, no. He said that you were upset that I was going to the beach by myself. And he looked at me, he said, oh, he said, you're going to the beach? I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, oh. He said, when do you go? I said, well, while you're taking lunch, I said, I go and I take bath at the beach. He said, by yourself? I said, yes, Prabhupada. I said, is it okay? He said, yes, swimming is Vaishnava activity. I said, so it's okay? He said, yes, it's okay. So I never went to the beach again after that. But he didn't yell at me, he didn't say anything, but I knew he did say it to them, you know. But he was so, Prabhupada knew I was very sensitive, but I had been with him a long time by that time, so he knew I was very sensitive to chastisement, so he took it easy on me. So then, so many nice things happened with Paramahamsa. One of my favorite things, again, this was after some time we were together, and Paramahamsa and I, we were very similar. We were both, as Prabhupada described me, as easygoing. In Hawaii once, the temple president had left, and we were all there, and Nittai and Paramahamsa, they said, well, Shrutakirti could be temple president. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, he's too easygoing to be temple president. So that was my nature, easygoing. So Paramahamsa, he was very similar. He was just this very nice, easygoing fellow. But as we were traveling around with Prabhupada from Hawaii, and we'd gone to Los Angeles and Mexico, all these different cities, Prabhupada was sitting in the Vyasasan, and to Prabhupada's right, I was always on Prabhupada's right, from his side there. And Paramahamsa, he would be on the left. He would have his danda, he would be on the left. And just like this temple room, so many devotees here in this temple room. So when Prabhupada traveled the temple, there'd be hundreds and hundreds of devotees. They would come from everywhere, whatever, in America, wherever it was. If they could get there, they would come to see Prabhupada. And the kirtans, they would be very, very ecstatic. So Paramahamsa and I, we were with Prabhupada a lot. Yeah? Every day, every kirtan, day after day. So we had this tendency, when kirtan was going on, we would just look around at the devotees, because they would all be in ecstasy chanting. And we would look and see who appeared to be the most ecstatic when they were chanting. You know what that means? You see devotees chanting in kirtan. Some become very ecstatic. So we would each try to pick the most ecstatic. And then Paramahamsa, he would look at me and he'd tell me, look at that devotee. He's really in ecstasy, you know. And then I'd say, look at that one. So we would start laughing instead of being in the kirtan. We were in our own consciousness. And we were just enjoying seeing the devotees chant ecstatically. And then we would laugh a little bit. So we were a little frivolous like that. So anyway, this was going on for some time, for some reason. And then we came and we went to Mexico City. Well, Prabhupada stayed in Mexico City for 1 week. And in Mexico City, they had a nice veranda where Prabhupada would take massage just before lunch. And massage, Prabhupada just sat on a straw mat. And we would both have gumchas on, that's just gumchas, and I would rub mustard oil all over Prabhupada's body. And sometime during massage, that was a really good time, the secretary would come in and he would read him the mail from the different disciples. So each day I'm there and I'm massaging Prabhupada and the sun's coming down. The morning sun, Prabhupada said, was very good. So this one day I'm behind Prabhupada and I'm rubbing his back, you know, rubbing. And off from the side comes Paramahamsa Swami. You know, Paramahamsa, he's got a batch of letters in his hands. And he had a way also, I said he was very tall and he kind of bounced when he walked, you know. So I'm massaging Prabhupada and I see this boy come in, you know, my godbrother and friend, and comes in and plops down, offers obeisances. And he pops up. I mean, he's just a young, he's a very young boy, 21 years old and very energetic. And he sits up and he just looked right at me. And he smiled when he looked at me. So now I'm massaging Prabhupada. And as soon as I saw his face, I just couldn't stop myself and I start laughing at it. I just looked at him and I just started laughing and laughing. And I'm still massaging Prabhupada, but then he saw me laughing. So then Paramahamsa starts laughing and laughing. And he's laughing and I'm massaging Prabhupada. So within 1 minute, the two of us are just laughing hysterically for no reason at all. And we're laughing so hard. I'm massaging Prabhupada, and I don't even know why. I was just laughing. But I'm crying, I'm laughing so hard, and I can't even massage Prabhupada anymore because my whole body just lost control. And we're laughing and laughing, and Prabhupada's right here. I'm massaging him. And he's sitting there with a stack of letters to read to him, but we're just laughing. And then I'm massaging, I try to put my hand, and then Prabhupada says, "What's so funny?" And then everybody, we just stopped laughing. We became very quiet because we weren't laughing anymore now. And I'm looking at Paramahamsa. Right? He's the sannyasi, you know. He's like the head of the society, you know. And I'm like, "Tell Prabhupada what's so funny." And Paramahamsa couldn't think of anything to say. So now I'm rubbing Prabhupada's back. And I said, "I don't know, Prabhupada." I said, "When I see Paramahamsa," I said, "I just laugh, you know." I said, "And we just laugh." I said, "I don't know what." I said, I don't know why. And Prabhupada went, "Hmm." He said, "Laughing is a Vaishnava activity." So then, "Well, that's good. At least we're allowed to laugh, you know, because..." Like Bhavananda was saying the other day, right, when all the Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas were very grave, you know. So laughing wasn't something we didn't know it was okay to laugh so much. So Prabhupada said, "Laughing is Vaishnava activity." So now Paramahamsa's sitting there quiet, and I'm massaging. And then Prabhupada said, "Yes." He said, "When I was very young..." He said, "Sometimes my father, he would take me out." He said, "And we would go along the Ganga." He said, "And along the Ganga," he said, "many Paramahamsas live there. And they just sit there and they meditate and they chant." He said, "So many Paramahamsas." He said, "And my father..." He said, "He would sometimes..." His father was always giving, he said, in charity to the sadhus. He said, "So my father, so he would take me with him. So he would give to these Paramahamsas sitting by the Ganga." He said, "He would give them ganja." And Paramahamsa and I are thinking, "What's Prabhupada talking about?" Now he said, "Yes." He said, "Sometimes," he said, "the Paramahamsas," he said, "they'll smoke a little ganja to help control their senses." And now Paramahamsa and I were like listening very intently. We'd never heard this before. This wasn't part of the four regulative principles, was smoke a little ganja to help control your senses. And Prabhupada's speaking very seriously and we're listening, you know. And he said, "Yes." He said, "Sometimes," he said, Paramahamsas to control their senses by smoking a little ganja. And then he looked at Paramahamsa right in the face and he said, "But not you, Paramahamsa." And then Prabhupada started laughing and laughing. He started slapping his knee and laughing and laughing and laughing. Because Prabhupada was so funny and he was so quick and he was so witty. See, because we were laughing and laughing, but we didn't know what we were laughing at. So just while we were sitting there, Prabhupada came up with this whole story. And then he told us, and he didn't call them sadhus. Prabhupada always would say sadhus, huh? Along the river to sadhus. But he called them Paramahamsas. So then he looked at him and said, "But not you." So then Prabhupada, he had the last laugh. Huh? See, that's the spiritual master's business. He always has the last laugh, you know. So I never ever told that story. That happened in 1975. And I never told the story for 30 years because I could never really, couldn't understand it. And nor could I make anyone else understand it, you know. But then a few years ago, I hadn't seen Paramahamsa for 25 years. We parted in 1975 and he went off. He lives in the mountains. And I saw him a few years ago. And we were talking, we were telling the stories, and he was laughing. And he said, "Yes." He said, "You know," he said, "I became a devotee." He said, "I was 16. He said, "And I never even been with a girl. He was just a young boy. He said, "I never had a date with a girl or anything." He said, "But when I became a devotee," he said, "I had one attachment." He said, "It was very hard to give up. It was smoking marijuana." He said, so when Prabhupada said that, he knew. So Prabhupada always knew all of this. So not only was it very funny, but it was very instructive to Paramahamsa personally. So in one thing, Prabhupada made very funny story because, like he said, Vaishnavas like to laugh. Laughing was a Vaishnava activity. So Prabhupada told a funnier, we didn't even have a story, we were just laughing because we were silly children, you know. But Prabhupada told this very funny story, and then he was laughing like anything, he was slapping his knee, he was laughing so hard. But he was also instructing his disciple, you can't do these things, huh? In 1972, Guru Das, at that time, this was during Kartik, he was living there in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was speaking about all the different in Vrindavan. He would say that how they take birth as animals, how the monkeys, the cows, the hogs, and it's their last being born in Vrindavan. It's their last birth due to some sinful activity. They take birth in these different bodies. So he said that the monkeys. He said they take birth as monkeys in Vrindavan because they're too much attached to sex life. And he said, in the hogs, he said, they take birth as hogs because they're too much attached to eating. So then these devotees with these attachments, they would take birth as hogs in Vrindavan. And then Guru Das said, Prabhupada, he said, what about the sadhus along the Jamuna? See, the same thing, these sadhus along the Jamuna. He said, you know, they're very attached to smoking ganja. He said, what happens to them? And Prabhupada said, oh, he said, they take birth in San Francisco as hippies. So you never knew what Prabhupada was going to say about anyone. But we were so amazed when Prabhupada said that these sadhus, that's what they do, you know, they smoke. They figure better be intoxicated than engage in illicit sex, you know, so you just become sleepy, you know. So, but we stopped laughing all very quickly when Prabhupada would tell a story. So then, on this tour was very nice with Paramahamsa. We went from there, we toured South America, and then after that, Prabhupada went to Australia. So this was also very nice. We have very nice things happen in Australia. And one of the as we said, we also liked prasadam very much when we were young, brahmacharis or grahastha, whatever. When we were in our 20s, we would eat so much prasadam. So as Prabhupada's servant, we went to Perth, Australia. Now, Prabhupada went here supposedly to rest. He was very ill. So they made an arrangement that he would stay in Perth, Australia, which is a beach town. I'm on the west coast of Australia. And we stayed at one devotee's parents had a holiday cottage there. So we got to stay there. So it was a small, nice cottage. And I remember walking up the steps. Prabhupada was walking up the sidewalk. And he was saying to Amoga, one devotee, said, "So you can arrange programs." He said, "And I can speak to professors, teachers, politicians." So even this was supposed to be a place for Prabhupada to rest. He wanted to preach. So then the very first morning, now the only people staying in this place, there was no temple there. It was hundreds of miles from the nearest temple. And Prabhupada was there in his room, and then myself and Paramahamsa, and these two brahmacharis, two Australian brahmacharis, they were very young boys. We were staying at this place. So there was no temple room, there was no deities, there wasn't even a picture of the deities, no panchatattva, nothing. So the very first morning, Prabhupada's up. He's always up early for his morning walk. And he calls in devotee and he said, "What is the program?" And the devotee says, "Well, we were thinking we would arrange, you know, we're trying to get speakers to come and perhaps in the early evening, when would you like?" And Prabhupada said, "No, what is the program?" So he's thinking again and he said, "Well, we thought we could set up different programs." Prabhupada said, "The morning program. What is the program?" He kept saying, because there wasn't any program. There was no morning program. There was no Mangalarti. There was no Guru Puja. There was no class. There was no japa. So he thought he was talking about these preaching programs. But Prabhupada kept saying, "Where is the program?" He said, "We have to have a morning program." So this morning, Devotee was asking how important. So even when Prabhupada, wherever he was, there had to be a morning program. Not a difficult thing, a pair of cartels. You get up early and you have a morning program. So now we're in Australia. Now this was after being in India for 6 months. So it was very different. In Australia, they had so many milk products, which as devotees, we really like milk products. So they have very nice first-class milk products in Australia, double creams and triple creams and butter, 5 cents a pound, and sour cream and yogurt. So many things were there. So we had the refrigerator filled with all these things. And of course, I would cook for Prabhupada, and I would always make enough so that we all had nice prasadam. Every day we were eating very nice, rich prasadam. And as I said, Prabhupada had his room, and then the four of us stayed in this other room, and somehow or other there was this window. You could see right into that room. So during the travels and all, you know, we would say we get jet lag, right, from traveling so much. Prabhupada never experienced jet lag, but we did. And so one day, after lunch prasadam, after eating nice big lunch prasadam with lots of sweets and lots of milk products and sour cream, and we were all sleeping in this room, sound asleep after lunch. So eventually I hear this bell just ringing. I don't know how long it had been ringing, but Prabhupada was ringing this bell. So I had been with Prabhupada now for over 2 years. So I could tell, you know, just by hearing the ring what it meant. So it meant I was in big trouble. That's what it meant, because it's ringing. So I go in, and I was sound asleep. I was sleeping, as they say, like a baby, and just sound asleep. So my eyes were all puffy, and so I go down and I offer obeisances, and I'm like I'm exercising my eyelids, you know. I'm trying to make them open up, you know, because I didn't want Prabhupada to see me sleepy, as if he didn't know I was asleep. So I'm just doing it, and I say my obeisances very slowly, but it didn't matter, you know. I sat up, and before I could say anything, he said, "I've been ringing this bell for hours." He said, "Everyone is sleeping." He said, "Like dead men." You know? And I'm just sitting there. And now, very quickly, the adrenaline's flowing in my body. So now I'm wide awake within a moment. And he said, "All the devotees are asleep." He said, "Just like dead men." He says, "It's the middle of the day." He said, "Why is everyone sleeping?" See, these are the questions. Prabhupada, he would ask you these questions, but you don't give answers. They weren't really questions. And if you tried to give an answer, then you just... So he'd say, "Why is everyone sleeping now?" And I'd go, "Prabhupada." He'd say, "Everyone's sleeping just like dead men," he said. He said, "You're..." He said, "All the karmis," Prabhupada would call them karmis, you know. "All the karmis are working hard," he said, "but not the devotees." He said, "They're sleeping very nicely," he said. He said, "Krishna's taking care of everything, so the devotees, they can sleep very nicely." And then he said, "So," he said, "if that's what you want to do, sleep, then go sleep. Go on," he said, "go back to the room and sleep." So I said, "No, Prabhupada, I don't want to sleep." He said, so then he sent me away. He said, "Go on, go." So he said, "Call the others." That was the other. He would say, "Call them." You know, and that was the thing. So this was the one and only time Prabhupada said that to me, that I wasn't happy to tell them that they had to go see Prabhupada, even for chastity. We liked it when Prabhupada would chastise. But I felt so bad that these two little boys, they'd never even seen Prabhupada before. So I woke up Paramahamsa. I said, "Prabhupada wants to see us." And I woke up these brahmacharis and I said, "Prabhupada wants to see." And they're, "Oh, jai, you know, Hari Kol." And I'm like, "No." they were all happy Prabhupada wanted to see them. And I'm like, "No, you know, that's not what it's for." So then we all go into Prabhupada's room, and again we all for a basis sit down, and then Prabhupada starts yelling at everyone again, and he said, "You're all sleeping like dead men, and why are you sleeping?" He said, "You're all nonsense, fools," you know, Prabhupada calls rascals and fools. He's just sleeping, he said, "wasting your time." And then he said this, he would say the same thing over, and he would say it again and again, and then he said, "So go sleep." He said, "I don't want to see any of you. Just go back to the room and sleep." And these brahmacharis are like, their heads are like, at least I had heard this before. So I knew there was some light, you know, as they say, there was light at the end of the tunnel, that Prabhupada would be okay, that he still loved us. But Prabhupada just completely devastated them, you know. And then he told them to leave. He said, "Go on and sleep then. Be in Maya. Go on, sleep." So we all got up and we left the room. And of course, nobody was sleeping. We were all sitting and everybody's chanting, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." And so then like 2 minutes go by and I hear the bell ring. And ding, 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 ding. So I go back in the room. And Prabhupada looks at me, he said, "So..." He said, "Have everyone come in," he said, "and we can have a reading from one of the books." So Prabhupada made a program. So then we all came back in, and he said to one of the boys, he said, "Take one of the books," all Prabhupada's books, they're the only books were ever in Prabhupada's room. They said, "Take one of the books." So he grabbed one of the books, I'm not sure, the Bhagavad Gita Nectar Devotion, and he started reading, and then he would pass it around. And we all started reading, and then Prabhupada would speak a little bit. So then he made everyone feel better, and we all realized Prabhupada loved us. He was just encouraging us and didn't want to see that we would have any difficulty. These are all, one has to be very careful in Krishna consciousness. Huh? Prabhupada would always say, the little thing, huh? Maya creeps in very gradually, then all of a sudden you're overwhelmed, you know. So he always tried to let us see that these things were very detrimental to our Krishna consciousness. So then we had a nice class in Srila Prabhupada's room. So then everybody, we all felt better. So then the evening comes, and Prabhupada had a program. It was a program. It was one school teacher, high school teacher, came in to see Prabhupada. And he was very nice. He seemed like a very nice man. He was asking nice questions. But this was a period. Prabhupada was speaking very forcefully. And he was talking a lot about how this Krishna consciousness, we're trying to establish first-class men. Yeah? So he's speaking to this man, and Paramahamsa and I, we're sitting in the corner of the room, and Prabhupada's speaking with him. And he's saying that human society is meant for God realization, and we have to establish Brahmins, first-class men. And then he's saying, there are no first-class men, he said, in society. He said, not even second-class men. He said, everyone is third-class. He says, right, there's no Brahmins, there's no Kshatriyas, there's no Vaishyas. He said, not even third-class. He said, all fourth-class men. He said, that's all that's existing. He said, but our business is to create first-class men in society. And then he goes, not even fourth-class. He said, everyone is fifth-class. So this man's listening, and he's agreeing, and Prabhupada's just going, oh, I'm very strong. And he said, everyone, he said, in society is fifth class. He said, and you also. And he points to the man. He said, you're also a fifth class man. And Paramahamsa and I were sitting there, wow, Prabhupada is so heavy. So, you know, Prabhupada could be so heavy, you know. And this man seemed like a nice fellow. We thought, he's speaking to him so harshly. And he said, you too. He said, you're fifth class. And this young man, and he said, how do I become better? So he was hearing. Prabhupada could understand. He could speak to him. So he said, well, how do I become first class? And Prabhupada said, you become first class, he said, by hearing from the pure devotee. And he said, well, you know, where do we find the pure devotee? And Prabhupada looked over at Paramahamsa and me, and he said, they are pure devotees. So we start. So 3 hours before, we were dead men. Worse than karmis. Karmis were at least working, but so we had been elevated from sleeping dead men to pure devotees by Prabhupada's example. He certainly wouldn't have pointed to himself and said, hear from me. So he said, you can hear from them. They're pure devotees. So Paramahamsa and I, we were very happy that day. That's what we said. Prabhupada, sometimes he would give you the sweet sauce, you know, and sometimes he would give you the hot sauce, you know. But it was all sweet. It was all very nice. So that's just a few of the things to be around Srila Prabhupada, what it was like to be around him. And in between, he was always preaching so nicely, always encouraging. But so personal, Prabhupada was with each and every one of us. You know, it wasn't Prabhupada just spoke in the temple room to the group, but everyone he was with, he took care of their Krishna consciousness. And he took care of everything in our lives. Prabhupada provided us when we were with him. He provided us with everything we needed. He would see that we had clothing. You know, he would see that we ate nicely. He would come out sometimes when we were eating, and he would just see what we were getting to eat. He wanted to see that we had nice prasadam. He personally wanted to see that each and every person was taken care of. So I see that it's very nice here at this temple and with Radhanath Maharaj. He has so many nice qualities like this that he takes care, huh? And this is what he's training you all to do. This is what it means to be a Vaishnava, huh? Is to have compassion and take care of everyone, to encourage everyone in Krishna consciousness. And this is how Prabhupada expanded this society so much, because people had such love for Prabhupada, because they could feel Prabhupada's care. They could feel Prabhupada's love for them. So they would do anything for Srila Prabhupada. So we still have a little time left. If there's anyone has any questions, comments, or I can go on. All these devotees here, no questions? Microphone, okay.
Hare Krishna. Shtukirti Prabhu, thank you for the nice class. We are starting the book distribution marathon from 1st December. We would like you to share some stories which will inspire our devotees to go out and distribute.
Okay. I'll do my best. Of course, we know this was most important thing to Srila Prabhupada, book distribution. Everything that Prabhupada did, of course, in this whole society was in service to his spiritual master. But the most important thing was, as his spiritual master told him from the very beginning, was to translate books into English, Vaishnava literature into English, and distribute. So this distribution was vital, and it's always what Prabhupada wanted us to do. In the early days, I was with Srila Prabhupada in 1973 in Los Angeles, and this is when book distribution really started to become very big. Big book distribution, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion. When devotees became empowered by Srila Prabhupada and they started selling books all over. And of course, at that time, Rameshwar, he became the very head of the BBT, Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, working for Srila Prabhupada because of his enthusiasm in distributing Prabhupada's books. So the devotees, they would go out all day, and then in the evening they would give Rameshwar a list, just like you read to the deities here in the morning, the list of the books distributed. So they would give that list to Rameshwar. And he would, in New Dwarka, Prabhupada was up on the top of the stairs where his quarters. There was one stairs that went up to Prabhupada's rooms. So Rameshwar, he was just a brahmachari then. He would stand at the bottom with this list. And he would just wait to see if Srila Prabhupada walked out of his room to use the bathroom or something. And then sometimes Prabhupada would see him and he would say yes. And then Rameshwar would read him the results of the book distribution. So Prabhupada would always give some very encouraging words to the book distributors, saying how it was the desire of his Guru Maharaj that these books get distributed. He even said, Prabhupada said that the temples were like warehouses for the books, where the books would go out from. That he had established the temples in this way, that they were meant for points of distributing Prabhupada's books. And as I gave a class when I first came here, stressing just how wonderful these books are. I don't want to say it all over again, but Prabhupada would read these books. Every day, Srila Prabhupada was reading his books. And I was telling the devotees at class one morning how so many times I would go in there and Prabhupada in the afternoon, he would be reading Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada relished these books so much. And then I was explaining it. And one time I went in and Prabhupada said, just this one book. He would say, if you just read this one book, you can be Krishna conscious. So that happened in 1 year. It happened three times. I would go in and each time he looked at me. And each time it was a different book. Once it was Nectar Devotion, once Bhagavad Gita. So then the third time it was Krishna book. And he said, if you just read this one book, you can become Krishna conscious. And then again I said yes. And then he looked at me and he said, just one chapter. If you just read one chapter, you can become Krishna conscious. So I just looked. And then he said, just this page. He said, if you just read and can understand this one page, you can become Krishna conscious. And he's still looking at me and I'm just nodding yes. And he said, just one line. If you just read one line of these books, you can be Krishna conscious. So now I'm getting very, you know, yes, Prabhupada. And then he just looked at me and he said, one word. He said, these books are so nice. He said, just one word. He said, because every word is Krishna. So this is what Prabhupada has given us. These books, it's giving us Krishna. We see them. They're on the altar there. The deities on the altar, these books that Prabhupada has given us. They're so special. In, say in the West, back in the day, in the 70s, we would call them time bombs. Prabhupada's books are time bombs. You know, a time bomb, you don't know when it's, you know, when it's going to go off, right? So that happens with Prabhupada's books. There's one personal story. My wife and I, we're in England now, and some years ago we rented one house. So this house was occupied by one very elderly lady. She was over 90 years old. And because she was so old, her children, they moved her out of the house and moved her in with them because she couldn't take care of herself any longer. So we rented this house. And in the house they left some things and they said, if it's okay, we'll leave everything in here. You keep what you want and the rest just get rid of. So we said, okay, that's fine. So we go into the house and on the shelf, there was a bookshelf. And on the bookshelf there was a Bhagavad Gita, as it is. And it was a very early edition. It was before this... the present edition, we called it an abridged edition, I believe it was by Macmillan Press, and it didn't have any of the Sanskrit or transliteration in it. It was all the verses, 90% of the purport. So it was like a small paperback book. But that was sitting on the shelf, so naturally we immediately grabbed it and started looking. And inside of it, there was two sheets with notes. So this 90-year-old woman had this book. Who knows how she got this Bhagavad Gita. But she had written down 2 pages worth of notes from reading this Bhagavad Gita. And she had complete slokas written out. And then she had parts from purports and she had different points. As simple as Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. She had, and then she had things about karma. Whatever you do, You get karma. So all these things that she was understanding by reading this book. So these books can change someone's life. As Prabhupada said, just by picking up a book can change someone's life. And I was saying I was in Brazil just last month. And I met this one man in Brazil at the Prasadam restaurant, pizza restaurant in Brazil. And he was introduced to me by a devotee. Now this man, he was now coming to the temple with his family, his wife and his children, and they were chanting japa. But this had just happened over the last few months. And how it happened is, this man had gotten a Bhagavad Gita 25 years ago. So he got a Bhagavad Gita in 1980 in Portuguese, you know, translated into Portuguese. So he had that Bhagavad Gita, it was sitting in his bookshelf. See, that's the power of a book. People don't throw books away. So he had it on his bookshelf. So now it's 2005, 2006, and I don't know if it's popular here, but in many countries in the West, tattoos are becoming more and more popular. People are getting tattoos, men, women, boys, girls. They're all getting tattoos. And one of the things that's become popular in tattoos are Sanskrit. They don't even care what it says. They just like the Sanskrit. You know, they like the style of the Sanskrit letters. I don't know if you ever heard of David Beckham, big football player in England. Well, he has Sanskrit, right? Across, you know, some Sanskrit sloka across his arm. So this man decided he wanted a tattoo. So he thought that book on the shelf has Sanskrit letters in it. So he thought, let me open up the book and I'll show it to the tattoo. I'll pick out some Sanskrit letters, some word in Sanskrit, and I'll take it to the tattoo artist and he can put it on me. So he took that book off the shelf after 25 years and he found some Sanskrit. So then he was looking at it and then he looked at the picture. So then he starts paging through the book. 25 years later, he starts looking in this book, starts looking at the pictures. And then he started reading the Bhagavad Gita. So after 25 years, the book just sat there on the shelf. So after all that time, now this man's coming to the temple with his family, his wife, his children. They're chanting, they're taking prasadam, he's becoming a devotee. So book distribution is so important. You can never underestimate the power of Prabhupada's books. Huh? And Krishna is there in everyone's heart. And everyone's looking for Krishna. So it's most important. Anything else? No? You see my god sister back there? Is that Narataki? Hare Krishna.
Krishna, could you tell that pastime of the air hostess with the puffed rice?
Mm. Okay. He asked if I could talk about the air hostess with the puffed rice. This was very special, very special. I found it most amazing, one of the most amazing things. And it was on a flight from Mexico City to Caracas, Venezuela. Prabhupada, myself, and Paramahamsa Swami were going to Caracas. Prabhupada had just been in Mexico City for 1 week. So it was a late morning flight. So one Mataji, she made Prabhupada some very nice puffed rice. I was saying this morning, Prabhupada liked puffed rice and peanuts. With a little chance. So it was very simple. It was just an aluminum foil and in a brown paper bag, and I would carry it. So we got on the plane. They said Prabhupada always took prasadam with him wherever he went. And we always had prasadam. So as soon as the plane takes off, Prabhupada said, okay. He said, you can give me the prasadam. And Prabhupada sat at the window on this plane. There were three seats, the aisle, and three seats on the other side. So Prabhupada would always sit at the window seat. And then I sat right next to Prabhupada. And then Paramahamsa Swami, he was sitting next to me. And so I put down my tray and I opened up the aluminum foil and I just sat it in front of Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was just picking and, you know. Prabhupada chewed very well. If you ever see that in the video too, the way Prabhupada chewed his prasadam, as we say, he would chew it so nicely, you know. So he kept taking handfuls and you could hear him chewing. So he ate about half of the puffed rice on the aluminum foil. So then he was very kind and then he looked at me, said, okay, he said, now you can take. So we would get Prabhupada's remnants right from Srila Prabhupada, you know. So we were always eager. So I put the tray down and I ripped the foil in half and I put half of it on the one for me and I gave Paramahamsa Swami the other half. So now we're both, Prabhupada just sitting there, we're both eating prasadam. We're not embarrassed at all to take prasadam in front of Prabhupada. And we're just eating, you know, eating and eating. So this young stewardess lady, she's walking down towards us. So now we're all dressed, shaved heads, tilak, dhoti, kurta, you know. And she's walking down the aisle and she stops right in front of us because obviously we look a lot different. But she looks and she looked at Paramahamsa and I eating And she reached past Paramahamsa and she reached into my plate and grabbed a handful of puffed rice and threw it in her mouth. And I was like, shocked. This woman did this, took food right off my plate. And she goes, oh, this is very good. What is it? And Prabhupada's not speaking to her. And Paramahamsa, he's like, just like the other time, Paramahamsa's speechless. So I said, it's puffed rice, I said. She said, oh, it's really, really good, you know. I said, oh, okay. She said, you know, who are you? What do you do? I said, well, I said, this is, you know, we're vegetarian, so, you know. She said, oh, she said, would, you know, can I get you anything? So she's talking to me, so now I look at Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, would you like anything? Prabhupada says, hot milk. So Prabhupada tells me hot milk, so then I say hot, I'm like the translator. So I said, hot milk. I said, we'll all have hot milk. Whatever Prabhupada was good for Prabhupada, right? We were discussing that this morning as well. So whatever was okay for Prabhupada was okay for us. So I said, we'll all have hot milk. And then she said, would you like anything else? She said, I can go into the first class. She said, they have fruit and cheese. She said, if you want, I can cut up some fruit and cheese. I said, Prabhupada, would you like any fruit and cheese? He said, yes. So I said, yes, we'll have fruit and cheese. So she goes up there, and she comes back with hot milk for everyone. We had fruit plate, cheese, and we're all happily eating, and she goes away, and I said, Prabhupada, that was really amazing. You know, I thought it was the most amazing thing I had ever seen someone take. This was Prabhupada's remnants. And this was a trained professional, supposedly, you know, that just took food off of someone's plate. Who would ever do that, you know? But she just grabbed it. Obviously, must have been super soul. And I said, Prabhupada, that was really something with this. Prabhupada said, oh, he said, women, he said, they have natural service attitude, he said. And I said, oh, okay. So he just made it like it was nothing special. But I saw that she took Prabhupada's remnants, you know. So I thought, this was a very amazing thing. So years went by. And somehow I was traveling and I heard about these people were on traveling Sankirtan in South America. And they went to this very far off place. It was just like a little village, just dotted with people, you know. When they were like on Padyatra, they were doing Padyatra. So they went and this woman invited them into her house. And she was a devotee. And she had pictures and chanting japa, and she was all, and nobody, there were no devotees, but here this woman was here. So it was this woman who took the prasadam. She'd become a devotee. So these people are there, and they're just waiting for Krishna. So such an amazing thing. It was one of the most wonderful things. So just by that service and taking Prabhupada's maha prasadam, this was so much potency. She'd become a devotee. So even in the midst of all these, no one even knew that this devotee walked in. He couldn't figure out how did this person become a devotee. But by Prabhupada's potency, she became a devotee. So that's what I say was, Prabhupada traveled around the world 15 times. And we have no idea, all you people, you have no idea how you got here, really. We can't say what it was due to. You know, what happened, what we heard, what we saw in previous birth, what might have happened. But Prabhupada is just literally an ocean of mercy. It was just distributing love of Godhead to all of us. So now that result, you can see all these seeds fructifying everywhere. And it's just going to increase. It can't be stopped. When Bhavananda was saying, this is the real revolution. Prabhupada said in 1975, he said that this Krishna consciousness movement will go down in the history of the world as saving human society. He said the day will come when it's recognized that this Krishna consciousness movement saved human society. So imagine such an important thing. We don't know. We don't know what's there. Prabhupada could see these things, you know. I never saw anything. I was with Prabhupada and I just saw what was going on. And I didn't even see that very much. But Prabhupada's vision was that of a pure devotee. Huh? Was timeless. Prabhupada could understand. When he was in Mayapur, Prabhupada saw everything. He could see those thousands of devotees from all over the world coming there to chant like they do now, as was predicted. Huh? Devotees from every corner of the world, they have kirtan, Harinam in Mayapur. So we're part of a very wonderful society, and it's all by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So we should be very happy, as I've been stressing each day. No anxiety. Devotee has no anxiety because we know we're properly situated. We just chant Hare Krishna, engage in devotional service, and our life will become perfect. There's nothing to worry about. We just place our life in the hands of the pure devotee in Krishna and be happy. So what is the difficulty? Okay. So I think it's 3 o'clock now. We have to stop here. And I'd like to thank everyone very much for sitting through this. And it's my great pleasure to be here with all of you. And I have to mention while I'm here with so many devotees that being here in this temple is like too much like sense gratification for me because I'm taking such nice care of. I think that I'm going to have to leave soon because the devotees are so wonderful. They have such a great Vaishnava attitude here, and it's really a pleasure to be here, and I hope I get to keep coming back all the time. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.